So this is just one of my poems, but it's a good way to kind of start this evening. At home, correcting ourselves over and over, some deep down longing, straightening posture over and over, reestablishing, developing this fearless openness, knowing no place better to cultivate this sanity, determined to stay in the center of one's own seat. The posture can be lost so easily. Darkness creep under our wandering thoughts, coveting the smallest of little sparkle, dragging us 100 miles from here. How to avoid the seductions? Stories seem more real than this place I sit. How to overcome the sharp edges of that withered leaf of the past, or the conjured up perfect future? Sometimes simplicity, the foundation of our own loveliness, living so close to this feeling of ease, the fire of your own voice singing praise to all awakenings, the fire of your own voice singing praise to all awakenings. At home, bowing to our own darkness, sitting by this fire of becoming. So I'd like to actually use a lot of the Venerable Ajahn Chah's work, which I've used at this, you know, sometimes called the One Seat, you know, as a preamble, in a sense. I want to read through it, go through it, to the awareness itself, you know. But in a sense, we've been on this process of kind of building. It's like building blocks of how do you actually relax, find ease, and then actually notice what it is that has always been there. Having reached this point, you know something of the path, but you must also be able to contemplate sense objects, turning your tranquil mind towards sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, thoughts, mental objects, mental factors, whatever arises, investigate it. Notice whether you like it or not, whether it pleases or displeases you, but do not get involved with it. This is liking, disliking and disliking are just reactions to the world of appearances. You must see a deeper level. Then whether something initially seems good or bad, you will see that it is only impermanent, unsatisfactory, and empty. File everything that arises into those three categories. Whatever is good, bad, evil, wonderful, whatever it is, put it in one of these categories. This is of the way of vipassana, by which all things are calmed. Before long, knowledge and insight into impermanence, unsatisfactory, and emptiness will arise. This is the beginning of true wisdom, the heart of meditation, which leads to liberation. Follow your experience, see it, strive continuously, know the truth, learn to give up, to get rid of, to attain peace. So that's from the Venerable. I have a whole bunch of his pieces, but I'm going to create kind of, I hope, a little bit of a map here, and then we'll see where we go. I'm going to read this other piece now. It's you know, again from him, and it's him talking about actually the normal state. I don't know, you don't have to buy this, but just this is his view of normal state. You will see that when the heart mind is unattached, it is abiding in its normal state. When it stirs from normal because of various thoughts and feelings, the process of thought construction takes place, in which solutions are created. Learn to see through this process. When the mind is stirred from the normal, it leads away from right practice to one of the extremes of indulgence or aversion, thereby creating more illusion, more thought construction. Anybody been doing that? Good or bad only arise in your mind. If you keep a watch on your mind, studying this one your whole life, I guarantee you will never be bored. Ajahn Chah. Okay. So I kind of want to set this up in some ways because this is, to me, one of the practice he talked about, which is really, by the way, a great practice. You know, is it impermanent? Is it suffering? Is it empty? You know, and that's really empty or emptiness. You know, it's empty of self, basically. Are we getting in the way of the material? You know, so those are the three categories. Very simple. You know, this is I'm trying to kind of give you some of the simple practices that are very, you know, they seem simple. But, you know, again, it's the awareness that knows what it is that's happening. So if it knows that, you know, oh, this, I see this arising, passing, that it's just impermanent. I see any form of grasping. I see the kind of the condition of some kind of contraction, and its nature is, if it isn't right now, it will be suffering. And that, you know, all conditioned things are empty of any core being. So, and which is, you know, that sounds like, oh, what's empty of any core being? You know, it's not so much whether it is or isn't. It's the fact that there is this power to let it go, you know. So, so that's one, that's this is a very kind of, it's very, to me, sometimes really useful. And sometimes it's useful, maybe not on the cushion all the time, but it's also, you can take it out in the marketplace, you know, and just to keep, because categories are, you know, only three things. This is about as much as you can remember, I know that. But, you know, it does take, you know, kind of repetition of saying, oh, I see what that is. Oh, I recognize that, you know. I see this clutching, grasping. And so these can be very helpful, very simple things, you know. And they are in the sense that they, because it's, this is kind of really core wisdom pieces, you know. So I want to move on to this secondary piece. So first, I think to describe so there is consciousness, and consciousness is rising and passing away at phenomenal speeds. And it has six doors that it can touch. So this isn't as simple. But the six doors are essentially what? Seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, sort of hearing,
smell.
And smell, and body sensation, and thought. You know, so these are the six doors, and consciousness is, you know, since when you're born, it kind of it's the flicker that keeps arising at very tremendous speeds, and it is dancing from one of these sense doors to another. And in Buddhist psychology, we don't separate out the senses from the thought. You know, that it also is in a sense, it is something that due to cause and conditions arises. And sometimes we're attached to body sensation, sometimes we're attached to sound, sight, taste, smell, and thought, you know. So this is the dance that we're kind of in, is that it's, and we have this kind of sense sometimes, unfortunately, that it's all happening at once, you know. But so there's two sides to this. One of them, you know, I don't know. I saw some science thing about how many kind of each sense door, how many millions of I don't know, 11 million or something, are happening simultaneously. You know, that so there the hear door, the seeing, tasting, smelling, taste. All there's always something going on. You know, but there's always something that pushes it into the foreground, you know, and it goes back to that foreground and background I've been talking about. And you know, I don't think anybody, you have any idea of why. Okay, it just, you know, I'm sure there's some subtle karmic something or other that says right now you're hearing, and next moment, you know, you're itching, and the next moment, you know, you're seeing. It's like that. It's this dance that's going on. And part of our process here is to be able to, in some sense, to first, we have to slow the system down. Because all this is moving so incredibly fast that we have no way of recognizing the individual parts. Now, so there are different ways of kind of playing with this, or working with it. And one of the ways that the Venerable talked about it was that the description actually comes out of somewhat of the Tibetan. But what it is that you're in a room, and in this room, there are the senses, which are five windows, okay? So our five senses. And then there's a door, which is the mind, which, by the way, hinges two ways, you know. And so the idea is that we're always, so all these are the eye, the smelling, the taste, the actual ear. So that's, these are the actual sense doors. And then there is, and so this is all kind of from an internal point of view. But what happens is that we may say, oh, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to watch my breath. And the next thing I know, something comes to one of the sense doors. You know, so one of these windows or the door comes and, you know, there's suddenly somebody out there going, oh, hey, hey, look at me. Hey. You know, and it's kind of ringing a bell saying, hey. You know, so it's in a sense, in a sense, it's kind of trying to pull you out of your seat. You got that, you know? And so this continuous kind of action going on the outside is constantly trying to pull you out. Now, a lot of times what happens is you actually, you know, I always think of kind of, this is kind of a movie of jugglers and clowns and stuff that are coming pulling you out. Of your practice in that one seat. What happens? You go off, you know? And the next thing you know, I mean, you can actually go off for about a day, you know? And, you know, some thought you follow, and next thing you know, you're down the road, you know, you end up in Tahiti, and, you know, everything is just going fine. And then some moment, you wake up. And you go, oh, whoa, I'm actually meditating, and I'm kind of sitting in this little bit of control tower that has these sense doors, and thinking going on, and bingo, and it happens so fast. You're just in that moment, you're back. Now, a lot of times, this is a little danger here. When you wake up, because that's actually what you're doing. You're waking up. You've been out on the little, you know, escapade, you know, and you made it all the way to Tahiti this time. And but you wake up and you come back instantly. Now, one of the things is when you this happens, my suggestion is, you know, one of the things of the self-critic is that it wants to, you know, admonish you, saying, "Oh, how come you weren't meditating? You were supposed to be meditating," and kind of lay a guilt trip on you. Okay? Don't buy it. You know, what's true is the moment you're back, there's an incredible kind of the difference between your journey to Tahiti in your mind and actually being here. There's a totally different feeling base, you know. And when you return, and that feeling base is really, you know, you will find more and more marvel in just kind of staying in your seat and being here, you know. And it's so easy, you know, it's so easy to be seduced, you know. There's a kind of image I use with this when I'm talking about it, and it actually comes out of the sutras, not the suttas. And it is that there is a ship way out in the ocean. And there is a little bird on that ship. But it's a long, long way from the land. And yet the bird keeps flying away and thinking, well, maybe I'll find land out there. Well, guess what? With the trip, the journeys of the mind and the senses, the bird has no place, you know, your mind, when it goes off to Tahiti or wherever, there's no place for it actually to land. It's all happening here. And so the bird has to come back. Now, in our kind of world, we come back instantly, by the way, as soon as we wake up. The bird has to fly back, so it's, you know, maybe it's not the best one, but, you know, you get the gist of it. You know, that's really what matters here, is that, you know, there's no place to land out there. There actually has never been any place to land. But because we're such good storytellers, that we keep believing that somehow, you know, I think it's wonderful to think you can sit here and, you know, think about the past and realize at some moment you think you can outthink it, so you think you can change the past, you know? And unfortunately, it's done. It's over, you know. Yes, you are a product of that, but it itself is over, you know. And sometimes we suffer so greatly, somehow kind of longing to change the past instead of let go of the past, you know. Two different things. And we also, you know, it's like also in that storytelling is somehow, you know, I think there are many planners in this room. And, you know, it's okay to have a template, but also true that, so there's a template. Okay, great. But there's a saying, you know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. You know, it's like, come on, you know. So yes, a template's there, but the problem is, I think of it as like the little kids with the little coloring book, you know, and they have kind of the kind of black outlay of it all. And what we do is we try to fill in all the colors. You know, it's like, oh, I'm gonna get it just right. The only thing is, life doesn't provide that. It provides even a much better picture, you know, if we could just have the template and trust. That's a really tough word, but trust in the unfolding, you know, and the essential goodness of it all, you know. And not, I'm not saying that there isn't all kinds of problems, but this is just kind of an attitude towards future. you know, that you actually have to have faith that once the template's there, don't try to fill it in, you know, because it's not going to, there is no way, you know, if you did fill it in, it wouldn't be your life. It would be somebody else's life, okay? You know, so, you know, so you have to be careful with this, you know? So the objective here is somehow that, which is really what our practice is that can, you know, that we're going to put a chair in the middle of the room, and we're going to, this was Ajahn Chah's kind of language for it, and we're going to put a chair in the center room, and that the job is to stay in your seat, not to, you know, it's not so much that you won't go to the sense door, it's just you won't go out the window or you won't go out the door. And that's the objective here, is don't go out the window and don't go out the door. It's not that if things are going to come, and many, and some of them are going to be really enticing, you know. I mean, they can be, you know, very fancy, you know, desire and all kinds of things can come. And it's there, you know, life is in some ways they're kind of trying to pull us away. And this is saying, no, I'm not going to pull away. So so you got how that works, you know. Now the Venerable, I'm just going to read a bunch of his stuff here. There's about four of them, and because I want to take it then to another step. But these are just I don't know. They're just he was good at images. And he loved to teach this teaching. So, you know, just go into the room, put one chair in the center, take the seat in the center of the room. And this is kind of important. These open the doors and the windows and see who comes to visit. So this is not in the sense of just to you know, sensory deprivation or something. We're not cutting them off. We're kind of leaving them open. This is somewhat in the Theravada system, because there's a lot about just, you know, close the sense doors. And this is saying leave them open, okay? You will witness all kinds of scenes and actors, all kinds of temptations and stories, everything imaginable. Your only job is to stay in your seat. You will see it all arise and pass, and out of this, wisdom and understanding will come. Okay? So I just want to read these things, and then we'll kind of move into another arena here. As I see it, the mind is like a single point, the center of the universe. And mental states are like visitors who come to stay at this point for short or long time. Get to know these visitors, and you will become familiar with the pictures they paint, the alluring stories they tell to entice you to follow them. But do not give up your seat. It is the only chair around. If you continue to occupy it unceasingly, and this is important, greeting each guest as it comes, firmly establishing yourself in awareness, transforming your mind into the one who knows. Then the one who is awake, the visitors will eventually stop coming back. And if you give them real attention, how many times can these visitors return? Speak with them here, and you will know every one of them well. Then your mind at last will be at peace. So, wonderful. The visitors to your chair consist of images, plans, memories, dreams, thoughts, emotions, and many others. Once you acknowledge their presence, they will be happy to leave. However, you have to be sure to notice them and not let them take over the conversation going on in your mind. How will you sit silently with these visitors? Do you watch them come and go, or do you try to entertain them? You good? Good? Yeah. So I've just kind of given you a little map here, and with some of his words. I'm telling you, it's great fun to observe closely how the mind works. I see the mind as merely a single point. Mental states are like guests who come to visit this spot. Sometimes this person comes to call. Sometimes that person pays a visit. They all come to the visitor center. Training the mind to watch and know them all with eyes of alert awareness. This is how you care for your heart and mind. This is the Buddha's firm and unshakable awareness that watches over and protects the mind. You're sitting right here. Since the moment you emerge from the womb, every visitor that's ever come to call has arrived right here. No matter how often they come, they always come to the same spot, right here. Knowing them all, the Buddha's awareness sits firm and unshakable. Simply know who the guests are as they arrive. Once they drop by, they will find there's only one chair. And as long as you're occupying it, they will have nowhere to sit down. Next time they come, there will also be no chair free. No matter how many times these chattering visitors show up, they always meet the same person sitting in the same spot. There's only one seat, and you're sitting in it. How long do you think they will continue to put up with this situation? Everyone and everything you have ever known since you began to experience the world will come to visit. Oh my. Simply observing and being aware right here is enough to see the entirety of the Dharma. So those are the venerable words. And, he makes it sound kind of simple and easy. And yet, you know, to stay in your seat, wow, you have some really interesting stories. You know, I said earlier how this place is really just a garbage dump. And, we come here and supposedly you're supposed to stay in your seat, but I know better, you know. You're all kind of time travelers, you know. You take off and, you know, maybe you don't go as far as Tahiti, but, you know, I don't know where you go, but, you know, I don't need to know that. All I need to know is that you leave. And you have left your seat, you know. And that in that, you will eventually, if you don't notice the impermanence, or you don't notice the emptiness of it all, then you will suffer. You know, it's like, oh shit, I got to get back to my seat. But you know, wait, I don't. How do I do that? You know, this was so enticing. You know, that dinner just was like, just took me away. You know, now, where is it? Where is my seat? So in a way, because the seat is really, you know, it's really inside us. And that we kind of play with the sense doors in the sense, okay, he says, oh, keep all the windows and doors open. You know? And instead of shut the suckers down, which is, a lot of times in Theravada and Buddhism, it's about shutting the doors and windows. But here, you know, it's essentially not to be bothered by it. So I have a little bit of different take on this in the sense that, you know, if the doors and windows are open, what happens? And a lot of these are tastes, smells, thoughts, memories, images. They come, and the idea is if we're in our seat, it's just like in the background of our mind, the foreground and background. We are the foreground. And in the background, sounds and images and thoughts and memories come, but they go right through. You know, we can kind of badminton, is that it? You know, with them. But the idea is simply to kind of stay in your seat, and have the seat as your foreground, and that is your place which is the practice of meditation, and the kind of all those things that come through are actually background, you know. So, to get through this, you know, we begin as we're sitting in that seat. There is, at first there's kind of some tension because we have to be so vigilant because of our attachment and rejection of our sense experience and our thought experience. We have to be really vigilant, you know. And that, you know, that is kind of the beginnings of meditation is vigilance at these sense doors and thinking. But at some point, as you go along, there is also, and this was also from Ajahn Mun and Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Sao and these venerables, that there was something in that, in this specific tradition of the forest tradition, that they kind of turned their attention to awareness itself. And in the teachings, a lot of it was that everything was impermanent, simply rises and passes away. But I think this Ajahn Mahabhu, who's actually a contemporary of Ajahn Chah, but and disciple of Ajahn Mun, who kind of wrote his biography, I guess it is, which is all full of caves and tigers and elephants and snakes and magic, you know. Thais love that stuff. I don't know. I like it, though. You know, it's kind of that mysterious. And they venerated him so much. You know, he was just, you know, he was very unattached. And in that unattachment, you know, and had the capacity to actually point. And some people actually saw what he was pointing at, you know. So this is from the Ajahn Mahabua. No, I'll tell you first. Yeah, when I'm up in Chiang Mai, it's really there's kind of the main ancient temple. I don't know, maybe 1,500 years old or something, you know. And then there's as you kind of do your circumambulation, there's two little temples, and one of them is to Ajahn Mun Bharata, who was the teacher of Ajahn Chah, and next to it, and they make these. Oh, it's almost kind of eerie. I don't know if to make it out of wax or something, but here is this old dude, you know, kind of hunched over, must be 100 years old, in complete, you know, I mean, he's in a little glass box, but, you know, but life's, everything is very lifelike, you know, and it's kind of like, oh my gosh, you know. And the Thais are so funny. I mean, they have kind of, it's kind of more real to them than us, but you know, it is still pretty, it's a little bit spooky, you know. You think, oh, he's just gonna, and if you ever, yeah, that's one of the things I always thought is, you kind of sit and watch this image, and you know, okay, this is kind of tight, and that that it kind of enters your stream of consciousness. And then they say, you know, then that image becomes part of your dream world. You know? It's kind of mysterious, huh? So, Ajahn Mahabua, you know, talk about mysterious. Whatever arises has to vanish. Whatever is true, whatever is a natural principle in of itself, won't vanish. Okay, this is kind of big. It won't vanish. In other words, the pure mind won't vanish. Everything of every sort may vanish, but that which knows their vanishing that which knows their vanishing. It doesn't vanish. This vanishing and that vanishing, but one which knows their vanishing doesn't vanish. Whether or not we try to leave it untouched, it keeps on knowing. The mind blankets everything. Okay, so this is actually from the Four Sutras. This is a really big statement, you know, because it says not everything that all processes here are all impermanent, but the knowing of them is not. So if all of this, it's really kind of like, okay, so I got born, and there was a knowing. I didn't know the knowing was there. I grew up, and I suffered, and then I came to practice, and I sat, and I learned about the sense doors, and I learned about the phenomenal door that swings back and forth with memories and images and past and all that stuff. I had to get that, you know. And then as I stayed in the seat, I began to see that there was the dualism of the seat and this building with these windows and doors, which is our bodies. Suddenly, there is something that has always been there that is kind of married to this experience. And that's married to the experience is actually something that is basically the knowing itself. The thing is, the knowing itself, like right now, if you kind of turn to the knowing and recognize that the knowing itself, it has no age. Actually, you're probably, everybody's about 30. It's not in time. And it is not, in a sense, hooked to anything, you know, because it is not a dualism of object and the knower. So what happens is we begin then to turn the attention towards this, that knows. And one of the, it's kind of has some funny things, like one is that you have to be relaxed. In a sense, you have to be at ease. And because you're not interested in the sense doors or the thought, even though they're open, you know, and there's experience going through, you're not interested. I know this. I've been watching this for a long time. And I get caught and I go out and I come back. And, you know, it is kind of this continual, you know, we call it life, this dance with the senses and thoughts. And suddenly there is this kind of, in a sense, it's kind of turning the mind around and seeing that that knowing that's there. You know, in some ways, it's if it's not hooked to any of it, it also, you could say, is a mirror, which is a mirror that has no image. And because it has no image, there is a sense of you know, identifiable happiness that is inherent, you know. And because in the dualism and the sense doors, there's actually suffering involved in it. There is impermanence, there is suffering, and the emptiness of the phenomena. But sitting there with the knowing itself, it itself, it has one, in a sense, quality. It lets go of any dualism between the sense door And I think we call it self, the in that way, and is somewhat the knower, but it is not the knowing itself, you know. And most people walk around in that. And we have to use that to get to what I'm talking about, you know. So it is, these are simply, you know, using awareness of the windows and doors and the capacity to stay is the precursor to the mind turning around and seeing, oh, you know, there's something that's been watching this the whole damn time and it's not hooked on it, you know. It doesn't vanish like all other things that are associated with the sense doors and that sitting in that seat. You know, you follow that? You know, to me, it's such a relief, you know, because it's a saying that freedom is not something that's, in some ways, I'll say this is not so true, but there's some big truth in it. It's not something to achieve, okay? Freedom is not something to achieve. It's actually something that is inherently here that is realizable. So it's like you don't have to go anywhere, you know. You simply have to recognize kind of all these processes that are catching you and how you, you know, run off to Tahiti or, you know, God knows where. And you come back again and you get back in your seat and you go, whoa, you know, I'm going to stay this time. And lo and behold, you know, you get fooled again, you know. And so, but you have to, it's like you almost have to do that so many times. You know, Trungpa Rinpoche, you say it's kind of like you have to, like an old pair of shoes, you just have to wear them down, you know. And I think that's kind of what these practices, you know. Ah, there it goes again, here I come back again, here I go again, here I come back again, over and over again. I hope you get tired of it, you know. And actually, you know, the thing, it just kind of gets boring after a while, you know. But here is something that's right behind it, you know. The difficulty is it attaches itself to the processes. And what we're saying, well, when there's enough relaxation and ease and enough kind of understanding, then there's kind of it is kind of a leaning back. And even though it's all the senses and kind of in the sense of knowing them is still there. But one, in a sense, has more, it'd be like saying, knowing that in the foreground that all these things are there, but the background is this, you know, it is kind of, you could say, just, I like to call it loving awareness, you know, because essentially, you know, it's not playing in the world, and yet, so there's a really sense of kind of essential freedom and happiness that is inherent in a human waking up. You know, it's no longer about the suffering. Doesn't that sound good? Yeah. No? Oh, gosh, you know. So, not long tonight. At home, correcting ourselves over and over, some deep down longing, straightening posture, over and over. Re-establishing developing this fearless openness, knowing no place better to cultivate this sanity, determined to stay in the center of our own seat. The posture can be lost so easily. Darkness creep under our wandering thoughts, coveting the smallest little sparkle, dragging us 100 miles from here. How to avoid these seductions? Stories seem more real than this place. How to overcome the sharp edge of that withered leaf of the past, or conjure up that perfect future? Sometimes simplicity, the foundation of your own loveliness, living so close to this feeling of ease, the fire of your own voice, singing praise to all awakenings, at home, bowing to our own darkness, sitting by this fire of becoming. So let's just sit for a moment. It's not like you get over yourself. You just lean back and see that all of this is held in this vast open space of awareness.